You're listening to The Bulletin with UBS, first broadcast on the 3rd of January 2016 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. On the last edition of the show, we reviewed the year that was, speaking to some of our favourite guests and contributors to get their take on a pretty extraordinary 2015. This week, with 2016 underway, we're looking ahead. We'll be checking in with experts around the world to hear about the events, trends and themes that could shape the next 12 months, from slowdowns to central banks, from emerging markets to migration. We'll make sure every base is covered. Let's begin our preview with Daniel Kalt, UBS Chief Economist and Chief Investment Officer for Switzerland. He talks about the challenges of the so-called search for yield in the year ahead.
I mean, the whole yield curve in Europe has shifted down over the course of this year, and it has made investing for fixed income investors even harder than any time before, because you actually don't earn anything anymore. Certainly in Swiss franc high-grade bonds, but also in many of European governments' high-grade bonds. So the search for yield will certainly go on and is even more pronounced than ever before. But that's, of course, the strategy that central banks follow with that policy. They want to shift investors out of riskless assets into riskier assets, such as equities. They want them to invest. They want them to spend their money. And that's happening to some extent.
What's the best strategy for doing this? Must people necessarily consider taking more risk? Yes and no, explains Daniel.
Probably many investors have to take a bit more risk to earn a decent yield these days. But if you take more risks, it's even more important that you manage the risks that you're taking. So diversifying in a very proper way is becoming more and more important also across borders. So international diversification is key across asset classes. So you probably also have to look at new asset classes which you probably haven't looked at in the past, alternative asset classes. All these things you have to do as an international investor to, especially if you're euro or Swiss franc based, to earn a decent yield these days.
Daniel Kalt. Simon Smiles, UBS Chief Investment Officer for Ultra High Net Worth, is a regular guest on The Bulletin with UBS. He too picks out some of the key macro themes ahead.
I think a big overarching macro view is that 2015 did not mark the peak for risk assets. There are at least three reasons for that. First, we don't see an imminent economic recession looming. We actually expect a modest appreciation in global growth from 3.1 to 3.4%. However, even if we don't get that acceleration in growth, we're a long way off economic contraction. In fact, that point is also very much supported by the entrepreneurs we speak to every month in our industry leaders network. Now, more than half of the companies we've spoken to in the last couple of weeks have been telling us they're actually planning to increase business expenditure next year following improvements in the economy. The second reason we don't think 2015 marked the peak for risk assets, we don't expect an earnings recession. In fact, we expect earnings growth to come back in the US, to be quite robust in the Eurozone, and to continue coming through in Japan. Again, without an earnings recession, it's hard to call the peak in markets. And finally, we don't think valuations are extended where they are. They're clearly not cheap when we're talking about equity valuations, but on 16 and a half times trailing earnings, you know, that's still below the 20-year average of close to 17 and a half, and the peaks we saw, for instance, in 2000 of 30.5 times PE. So I guess that's the key macro view. In terms of our more tactical views, first, volatility is likely to remain elevated. Secondly, we remain overweight equities, in particular Eurozone and Japanese equities. And finally, we believe that the US dollar has ended its bull run after a 10% trade-weighted increase over the course of 2015.
And does Simon see anything to suggest changes to the fundamental principles of advice?
I think in a world where central bank policy continues to be exceptionally easy and supportive, and a world where the economy is growing, albeit modestly, and corporate earnings are coming through, it's very hard with yields where they are not to allocate to equities. At very least on a relative basis, they continue among listed assets to look relatively attractive. But I think the bigger point here, as we face increasing volatility this year and we face uncertainty over the actions of the Federal Reserve potentially putting up interest rates and the like. First rule, you know, investing, to have a well-diversified portfolio, I think will never prove truer than in 2016.
Simon Smiles mentioned Fed interest rate hikes, among other things, in his summary. And the Fed and its activities through the year are front and centre too in the thoughts of Douglas Rothstein, and we'll be hearing from him next. Douglas Rothstein is head of interest rate strategies for developed markets at UBS Private Wealth Management. What are the benchmarks and expectations shaping 2016 thoughts in Douglas's view?
Central banks have been careful to be extremely clear in their communications. They don't want to surprise markets. The overall environment is a little bit fragile, and central banks want to contribute to stability, of course, rather than upsetting it. So the U.S. Federal Reserve, for example, has been preparing us for rate hikes for a good part of the year. So there was some possibility that they could have happened in June, but this was not really expected. But by September, it was expected there was a good chance that the Federal Reserve would hike rates. Now, this didn't happen because of probably volatility in other markets concerned the Federal Reserve. While the U.S. was doing okay, they were worried that problems in emerging markets, slowdown in China could spill over, and so they didn't go.
Now, of course, at year's end, we did see the Fed raise rates, exactly as Douglas and others had been predicting. It's important to remember a number of other key considerations when it comes to central banks, such as where rates might peak, when considering investment strategy for the year ahead. Douglas Rothstein again.
We also believe, and the Fed supports that the eventual peak in the Fed funds rate will also be lower than it has been in the past. So conditions in the U.S. are likely to remain accommodative. And looking on the European side, the ECB has just announced that they will continue their QE program until March of 2017. So that's a six-month extension to what they had previously said. And of course, that this program is in effect open-ended, and they will continue the program until their goals have been met. So that means that there's also another major central bank in the world where policy is extremely accommodative. And in Japan, also the central bank continues their QE program. So that's a third major central bank where conditions are extremely accommodative. So what we think is that this makes a rather positive environment for risk assets. For that reason, UBS is recommending an underweight in high-quality bonds, including government bonds, and an overweight in risky assets, where we like especially credit, and there the focus is on European high-yield credit and U.S. investment-grade credit, and equities as well. And in equities, we favor European equities and Japanese equities.
Mike Ryan is Chief Investment Strategist for UBS Wealth Management Americas. He's focused on the Fed too. Into 2016, what happens next for the Fed in Mike's view?
Well, first of all, I do think the Fed will continue the process of normalization. I think there was some folks who believed that this was simply a one and done, the Fed would raise rates once and then move to the sidelines. I don't think that's the case. I think they will have to make additional rate moves. But as I said, I believe those rate moves will be both in a deliberate and a measured manner. Now, how the markets react to that, understand that in the past, when the Fed begins the process of raising rates, markets actually tend to react fairly favorably. And therefore, I think if you look at it, the early part of a tightening cycle is not threatening to risk assets. I'd also argue that, remember that the Fed is beginning a process of normalization. They're not moving towards an acute tightening. And they are going to move, as I said, very pragmatically. And remember that they're resetting policy from a very low rate. Right now, we have negative real rates. So when we typically see Fed tightening being disruptive of markets, is usually when the Fed has to move in a much more aggressive manner, and also when the real Fed funds rate is moving into positive territory or is already in positive territory. We have neither of those conditions today. So I think overall, over the course of 2016, I think the normalization process can progress, and I think markets can continue to move higher. I think we will see, again, another year where risk assets continue to have more price appreciation over the course of this year. That said, I do think that the outcome is going to continue to be mixed, and I think the return prospects are going to continue to be uneven.
It is pretty remarkable to consider that, as Mike reminds us, it's a decade without a rate rise. Just how extraordinary a period has it been?
Well, it's been unprecedented. I think we've never seen a period where we've seen this response from a central bank, that is where they have moved to zero rates and kept them so low for so long. But in addition to moving to zero rates, they've also seen extraordinary expansion in the Fed's balance sheet. Think about this. The Fed balance sheet before the crisis was about $800 billion. Where it stands today is about $4.5 trillion. I mean, that's an exponential growth in the Fed's balance sheet. So it is unprecedented. Now, I would argue that it was also warranted. Remember that the financial shock we saw because of the credit crisis, the bursting of the credit bubble, that had huge impact in terms of damage to the economic outlook and certainly to the macro environment. So the Fed needed to respond appropriately. And I think this is partly because of the lessons that central bankers had learned in how they responded to the Great Depression, in that they immediately moved towards more accommodative policy and also towards an expansionary fiscal policy. So I think it was the appropriate mix, and therefore it explains why we've had this unprecedented policy. But I also think since those conditions are no longer acute, in other words, we moved past the financial crisis, we're no longer in recession, we no longer have a financial system that's at risk, the Fed and other central banks need to begin the process of normalization.
Mike Ryan. Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look at how the challenges of two great variables, migration and terrorism, could cause volatility to test the very best strategic planning in the next 12 months. Steve Bloomfield is the executive editor of Monocle, and on last week's show, he unpicked two themes that have shaped so much of the geopolitical picture in 2015, migration and the threat of and reality of terrorism. We sat down again with Steve this week to ask him what role migration first will have in 2016.
Migration is going to continue to have an enormous impact on economies and also on general populations across the world. This is not only an issue for Europe. It is, of course, also an issue for the nations where migrants and refugees are coming from, particularly when we look at the issue of economic migrants. Many people are leaving countries in Africa or in the Middle East because they simply can't get a job there, or they can't get a job that's going to support their family. So they are moving overseas in great numbers because they want to be able to provide for their families and they want to be able to have an opportunity in life. And so these issues are going to continue to be at the forefront of policymakers' minds in 2016. And let's be honest, at the moment, very few frontline politicians, mainstream politicians, really have a good idea of what to do, whether those are politicians in Africa or the Middle East or politicians in Europe and North America.
And what about terror? Might we just learn, however painfully, to accept its presence across the globe?
The fear of terrorism is going to continue, sadly, to be a part of our lives, certainly in Europe and the West. And there's very little that suggests that that's going to change anytime soon. And that obviously has an impact on the way that economies operate. And we have a fundamental choice to make. It's, do we continue to be as open and as liberal as we have been in the past? Or do we start to shut down borders and begin to glance over at our neighbours with a slightly worried eye? And I think which way we decide to go will have a major impact, not just on the sorts of countries we become, but also in how well these economies actually grow. And if we're looking at things from a purely economic point of view, we need to resist the urges to shut down borders and fear our neighbours. Whether that happens or not, time will tell.
Monocle's Steve Bloomfield. Let's zoom in a little on the European picture, which Steve has touched upon. Themis Themistoklios is head of the European Investment Office at UBS Wealth Management. In 2016, we may need to get increasingly used to the use of the fairly horrible portmanteau word Grexit. We know what it means, but will it actually happen? Themis takes up the story.
I still think there will be occasions we've got to talk about Greece again as one of the risks in Europe, but clearly two things to it. First of all, I think the markets now sort of recognize that Greece is a very small economy and will not hold back the economic recovery, whatever happens. And the fact that the Europeans actually stood up and said, well, if Greece wants to go, let them go. We're not prepared to budge in terms of negotiations. That also created a precedent that we know now that if Greece doesn't comply, they could potentially find themselves outside the euro. But from the other side, we've seen a huge amount of progress in the last couple of months, which is very encouraging. A lot of reforms have been adopted. Privatizations are underway again. So we've seen a lot of very strong willingness from the current government to implement the reforms that they promised to the creditors. It's not going to be plain sailing because we know the social security reform currently on the table, and they've been trying to get the opposition parties to support them in getting that through, and the opposition parties are basically refusing. It's a big bill. It has to go through. So there will be times when they're going to try and put reforms through Parliament and they've got to struggle and the question will come up again. But overall, I don't think we're going to see a repeat of what we saw last year.
The key themes for Europe and Greece in particular from Themis Themistocleous. Let's switch out to a global view, taking in the emerging market picture next. We've already discussed a pretty challenging EM picture through 2015. Will the same issues and pressures be acting through the next 12 months? Jorge Mariscal is Regional CIO Emerging Markets at UBS.
Some of these issues will remain. I think there are three key factors that will drive performance in 16. One is Fed policy and, to a lesser extent, ECB policy. There we expect some headwinds from the Fed hiking rates as much as 125 basis points between now and the end of 2016. The ECB easing policy will continue, and that will offset some of these headwinds, but I'm afraid it would not be enough. Then China, if China does stabilize as we expect the first half of 2016, that should reduce risk premium for emerging markets in a meaningful way, and people will be perhaps a little bit more willing to put money to work in EM. And then the final issue is commodities. And here we're not very constructive. We think at best we're going to see a sideways movement in most of the commodity prices that we track. So I would say we're now neutral on emerging market equities and neutral in most emerging market assets. The valuations are compelling, but we're still lacking the catalyst for a better performance.
And that brings us to the end of this 65th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance every week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via iTunes or SoundCloud. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.